From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from Monroe, Louisiana. This program is made possible in great part by you. You that are listening, you that are supporting us. Today, as the world around us changes in unsettling and unexpected ways, it's more important than ever to provide this platform for thoughtful, respectful dialogue and voices that all too often go unheard. For more information on how you can keep this show on the air, please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. On our interfaith calendar, March 20th brings the long-awaited spring equinox observed in the Wicca and pagan traditions as Astara and Mabon. Tuesday brings the Zoroastrian and Baha'i New Year. And March 25th is the Christian feast of the Annunciation of the Virgin Mary. At the intersection of religion, government, and politics, it's not just mosques and synagogues that are under attack. In New Orleans, a church's stained glass window was partially shattered with a brick less than 2 days after hosting a town hall on anti-transgender violence. That event followed the murder, days apart, of two transgender women in the city. A federal judge in Hawaii blocked the second iteration of the administration's Muslim ban on Wednesday, just before it was set to go into effect. The ruling highlighted the president and other officials describing the intent of the second ban as being very similar to the first. Notably, the judge said the executive order was a potential violation of the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. And in an election that many have viewed as a test of the strength of rising right-wing nationalism around the globe, exit polls show the centrist Dutch prime minister surviving an aggressive challenge from the anti-Muslim nationalist PVV party to win another term. And back in the United States, a lion of the religious freedom movement has announced his retirement. My good friend, the Reverend Barry Lynn, longtime head of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, has announced his retirement at the end of this year. Undoubtedly, his activism will continue, and we wish him all the best as he completes his tenure at this crucial time for our nation. Now, here's what's coming up this week on State of Belief Radio.
Deep cuts to agencies like the Environmental Protection Administration and the State Department, while increasing defense spending by $54 billion.
With so much attention going to the president's tax returns, the administration's attacks on federal agencies, including the EPA, have not gotten as much attention as they should. On this week's show, I'll welcome the Reverend Fletcher Harper, Executive Director of Green Faith, back to State of Belief.
So it is just flat out nonsense to suggest that this country was built on anything other than an understanding of Judeo-Christian principles.
Of all the political upheaval we've witnessed in recent months, one of the most disturbing aspects has been the resurgence of the political religious right as a leading force in public policy and rhetoric. Even as people of faith who are committed to preserving the constitutional separation between church and state worry, the matter is even more galling for Americans who do not confess any religious beliefs. We'll talk about this situation when I'm joined this week by Kyle Jones, an atheist activist who has recently joined the board of Interfaith Alliance. But first,
there's enough for everybody. There's a way democracy can be real in our time. There's a way that we can be one people under God.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes Jr. is Senior Minister Emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City. For many decades, he has been a leading voice for civil rights as well as spiritual awakening in our nation. It's likely that Reverend Forbes is as busy now as he's ever been, which is why I'm grateful to be able to welcome him back to State of Belief Radio. Jim, thanks for being with us again.
And good to be with you always.
Listen, I've been very eager for the chance to talk with you about the profound changes that we've seen in our national leadership. How have you been addressing the policies of this new administration?
My primary focus has been that while we are aware of the transformation in our own nation, we've got a global problem. And it feels almost as if our current crisis reminds us that we're in the midst of spiritual warfare. Now, what do I mean by that? I simply mean that there has always been the forces that work for domination in the world. And then there is, within our religious traditions, the concern about a domination-free society. Well, I've tended to look at our current crisis in the light of those forces, and we've got a tug of war between the forces that are committed to freedom, to justice, respect, mutuality of respect for all people, those forces that are interested in compassion and truth, those forces that are interested in care for the vulnerable, those forces that are eager to maintain respect for the very context of our world, the environment, and for people of different faiths and traditions. That's one side. But there seems to be strong forces centered around self-interest, power-seeking, that are prepared to function out of the myth of redemptive violence and that are prepared to be aggressive in garnering resources and power in a particular direction, excluding others. Mm-hmm. That's a tug of war. And so I have tended not to be, as it were, pulled down into partisan wrangling or either into personality vilifications, as much as to say, man, are we in a real warfare situation, and we need to at least figure out which side we're on in the distinction between domination forces and domination systems versus domination-free orders of the world.
How concerned are you about the racist overtones of so much of the rhetoric that we heard from supporters of this president, both before and since the election?
It is very serious that people do not know how deeply impacted we all are by the evil, and I call it even demonic, system of racistic thinking. Xenophobia is so strong, but the fact is it's been brought forth to the surface. And now there is the legitimization of the expression of racist attitudes that we wonder what will be the difference. When it was undercover, it was bad enough. Yeah. Now that it's out in the open, how perilous is the path ahead of us if we are trying to be a democratic society? Mm-hmm. So I really think that political games and policies notwithstanding, the whole spirit that legitimizes separation, alienation on account of race, that's a deadly disease. Mm-hmm. There are signs that it could be taking on epidemic proportions in some communities. I'm very happy that this is making clear for some people that they want to disavow racist thinking and behavior. It's making some folks freer, But I think maybe it's also freeing up some people to say no, 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 as was the case in the Netherlands, where it feels like what's happening in America has made people say, well, you know, I know I've had some problems, but I don't want to be in that negative group that seems to be flourishing in the American context.
Jim, you are traveling and speaking more than ever. Tell us what you've been doing in partnership with other leaders concerned about the direction we're headed in.
Well, I was with Reverend Barber and the Repairers of the Breach, and we preached together in over 20 different states. The reality is that in every place we have gone, we have gathered interfaith partners who really made it feel like we were mostly preaching to the choir. That is to say, maybe I should celebrate that interracial and interfaith conversations are possible, and that where people gather, they seem to be happy that they can take a stand for our being the beloved community. I've been very much happy that we've had live streaming of our program. I've been very sorry that the press has not generally been able to consider the gatherings, which we thought were quite remarkable, as newsworthy. So I'm glad that the choir is singing better. I'm sorry that the culture is not as eager to hear an alternative narrative to the one that is being proposed in much of the campaign rhetoric of the past, and now the new administrative perspective. And I think there is real anxiety that we may be going down a cliff.
Yeah.
Environmentally, we may be reaching the what they call the point of no return in regards to the possibility of warfare and even the imagining of nuclear warfare. There's real anxiety in terms of the destabilization that seems to be the pattern that has been seized as the profile of the new administration. So there's great anxiety all across the country when I go, and people are crossing their fingers, and if they could, they'd cross their toes, that we will not be led down an avalanche of destruction in the current spirit that seems to be embracing much of the country.
Knowing how you perceive the national spirit and how you've perceived it for a long time, how do you see it today, and is there a time in our history that it reminds you of?
Well, the reality is that we are in the advanced stage of secularization. And that is the fascinating thing to be aware of. That is, the things that are happening could not really have happened if we were paying attention to what was the design and the desire of the Creator for the way we relate to each other as people and the way we relate to the environment itself. These things could not happen if we even took time to consult what would God's will be for how we structure our life together, political policies we make, economic distribution, how we do conflict avoidance, or either how we do conflict resolution. And I'm very much aware that we have abandoned that natural sense of accountability to the God of creation and to our responsibility to each other and to our call to show concern for the common good. Now, that sounds like we are at the point where we need another great awakening. So you ask me, what does it remind me of? The conditions that existed before the first, second, and third awakenings, great awakenings in this nation, where things had started to come unraveled, where the social contract had somehow gotten completely flawed and tattered, where people did not have common values, where they did not have hopes together. Those conditions are with us now.
So if you could predict that God is merciful, and just as God responded when things started coming unraveled, unglued, that the great God will now say, I really must give spiritual revitalization on a large scale to the nation. Well, I believe we are right back at such a point where we qualify. So my prayer every day is, Lord, look upon us. They needed it just before the Revolutionary War. They needed it in the days of abolition. They needed it in the days of the social changes that needed to take place under the days of the social gospel. Won't you pour out your spirit on us now? I mean, all of us. Start the fires of revitalization burning again. Otherwise, we don't know what's going to happen to our wonderful nation.
You know, conscientious citizens are, to a large extent, being overwhelmed by what's going on. There's so many demands. How would you advise someone who is feeling overwhelmed to decide where to focus their activism and efforts so as to have the greatest amount of impact on the future?
You know, I would first of all say, I do think that if the revival is coming, it needs to start with individuals. So, you know, when I get up in the morning, I pray, Holy Spirit, lead me, guide me as I move throughout this day. May your promptings deep inside me show me what to do and say. In the power of your presence, strength and courage will increase. In the wisdom of your guidance is the path that leads to peace. And then after that, then I think we all have to do some fresh visioning. We see the world as it is. How would God want it to be? So that I think we need to be with friends who can do some fresh visioning, friends who can talk together about what's wrong with the way things are and what would look more right than it is now. And then after that, we need to be with an action group, because there's nothing like that inspiration. When you see what's wrong and you don't get up and do something about it, then pretty soon the wrong conditions become the new normal and we become adjusted to it. I think Dr. King talked about maladjustment. We need some maladjusted people for whom the present trends are not in the direction of life, but rather in the direction of death. So everybody needs to pray, then everybody needs to think, and everybody needs to do some visioning, but everybody needs to do some acting. And if you can't act in a massive way, do some small things. Wherever you see somebody that's needful, help if you can. Start speaking to folks you didn't used to speak to. Wherever you see things going along, learn to throw down the flag like we do on the football field when there's a violation. We need to say, that's wrong. If we need to recognize that, probably to be a person of faith requires you to allow your witness to be positive when it needs to be positive, but to be shrill when it needs to be shrill, and try to do it all without becoming violent, because the world is already too violent, and that violent approaches to resolving the problems are likely to exacerbate the problem rather than to help solve it. That kind of thing, and then pray for peace. And then if you got a little song to sing, keep a song of hope in your heart, even as you see the things coming unglued that used to hold us together.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr. is Senior Minister Emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City. Reverend Forbes continues to make a profound contribution to the well-being of our society and our nation. Jim, I am so glad to be with you again and benefit from your wisdom. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
And thanks for the opportunity to share some thoughts.
As the Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Awards ceremony draws near on April 4th, it's a great time to take a closer look at the organization through the eyes of the people who've chosen to make it a priority in their own activism. Such was the case with the late Walter Cronkite. Such is also the case with the members of the Alliance's board of directors. Today, I'm happy to be joined by a man who has recently joined that board, Kyle Jones. Kyle, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
Why did you decide to become a member of the board?
A little bit of my background might help answer that question. I'm an atheist, but I do interfaith work. So I want to try to build these bridges between value-driven communities that have religious views and some that do not have religious views, like humanist groups and secular groups, because I feel there's a lot that we can work on together. So I feel inspired by the work that Interfaith Alliance has done over the years. I also am inspired by its new president, Rabbi Jack, who I find as a personal inspiration. And I just feel like broadening the tent to include non-religious people, secular folk, agnostics, atheists, humanists, and these types of people moving forward will be nothing but beneficial.
How does this work fit in with your own personal beliefs and convictions? Has it always been a part of your identity as a person?
That's a great question. For me, it's finding what I call strange connections. Those unique and sometimes difficult connections that reach across, that try to find commonalities in places people think they wouldn't exist. So for me, that's finding ways to bridge some of these cultural gaps between the non-religious persons and religious persons. I find that working with Muslims, Jews, Christians, people of minority religious faiths to be some of the most rewarding work for me. Now, there are some atheists, some of my fellow comrades, that are skeptical of this kind of work. They're a little hesitant. They feel a certain animosity towards something like organized religion or even interfaith work. But there's a growing number of us that believe that even if we disagree on theology, even if we disagree on particular beliefs about X, Y, and Z, we share this world together. You know, we breathe the same oxygen. We have to find ways to work together. And for me, as an atheist, it's a pragmatic move. It's vitally important to break down some of these walls that have been placed upon us and between us, and to try to reach beyond our camps and transcend our tribalism. And that sort of work, it inspires me. It's extremely important and valuable.
You may or may not know that my own personal history includes years spent working in leadership in the Southern Baptist movement before leaving it behind once it became clear the organization was putting politics above spiritual matters. Would you talk about the path that you've followed to the place you're at today in terms of religion and faith?
Sure. Well, I was a Christian in my teenage years and sort of my earlier 20s. I was of the Reformed Protestant persuasion, so I was a Calvinist, and I was a youth pastor. So I went off and I went to seminary, as you do. Then I went, you know, to graduate school and studied religion and philosophy and theology. And during that time, I started questioning and doubting some of my beliefs that I once held dear, and went down this sort of arduous path of deconversion over a few years. And I think, ironically enough, when the scales fell from my eyes, so to speak, I had this kind of dissonance. I didn't really know how to reconcile these two eras of my life. And I feel like I got a little upset that I had, you know, devoted my time and energies, and my identity was bound up in this Christian worldview and my church community, that there was this big rupture, and I was pretty upset, you know, and I started looking at all of the horrific and horrible examples of religious persons throughout history. And, you know, I had this anger. And then I feel like over time, it sort of calmed down to where now I realize in religious communities or in non-religious communities, there are people that justify marginalizing and hurting other people with their beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that religion has a monopoly on violence. It doesn't have a monopoly on bigotry. So over those few years, I might have, what I like to call, got a little more seasoned and refined and wanted to bridge these two eras of my life. And I thought the best way that I can possibly do this is just to act it out in my own life, to find those ways to work with religious persons. Mm-hmm. And so that's a sort of short biography.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. Kyle, you created a program called Take an Atheist to Church. Would you please talk about that?
Sure. I started this project called Interview an Atheist at Church Day. And what I did is I coordinated interviews throughout the U.S., a couple in Canada and Australia, and I set up a pastor with a local atheist. And what the pastor would do during Sunday is take some time out and just sit down and talk and interview the atheist. So I know lots of pastors. I know lots of people in ministry. Mm-hmm. So I just contacted them and said, hey, would you be willing to not have a debate, but have just a discussion, a kind of down-to-earth interview with an atheist? And a bunch of pastors responded and said that they would be willing. And then I just put feelers out and found atheists. And then these pastors interviewed them. It started off 1 year, and we had about 25 interviews the first year. And then the second year, we had, you know, another 20 or 30. There's been around 50 or 60 of them. And you can go to YouTube and type in Interview an Atheist at Church Day. You can look it up on Google. And most of them are videotaped. So the project is basically trying to find a way to humanize atheists to church-going people and to humanize pastors and churches to atheists. So it's a way to break down stereotypes. It's a way to find what I feel to be a better and more constructive way of forming a conversation than something like a debate.
That's a terrific idea. Kyle, a lot of us are deeply concerned about the resurgence of the political religious right and its influence in this presidency and the Republican Party as a whole. What are your thoughts about what's going on there?
Oh, wow. In short, I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump. Not a big fan of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is really destructive views, particularly surrounding Muslims, especially with the ban and these sort of things. Also of, you know, myself, of having Mexican heritage, a lot of this immigration conversation and what ICE and deportation officers have been doing, I find very problematic. I think there's a better way to imagine the U.S. as a diverse and welcoming place. Yeah. And I don't think that sort of those values are being pushed by our current president.
Are you satisfied so far with your experience working with Interfaith Alliance?
I am. I look forward to more. I look forward to coming up with some, hopefully some new and novel ideas and strategies. Hopefully I can do my part in bringing in more of the atheist and the agnostic and the secular community to, you know, work together with Interfaith Alliance. I would love to see that. And but I am happy so far, yeah, and I very much look forward to some of the constructive things that we can come up with.
Well, I think Interfaith Alliance is really well off in having you on the board. Kyle Jones has recently joined the board of directors at Interfaith Alliance, the first openly atheist member of the board. I'm grateful for the opportunity to get to know you today and to have you share your thoughts with us. Kyle, thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much, Reverend. It was an honor.
Among all the other upheaval in Washington, D.C. lately, significant and unprecedented cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency echo the worst fears of those who perceive the new administration as being profoundly indifferent to the environment. Working on the front lines of protecting nature in the name of religiously inspired morality is the organization Green Faith. And I'm happy to welcome its executive director, the Reverend Fletcher Harper. Fletcher, thank you so much for being with us again.
It's good to be with you.
I've been hearing a lot of dismay and fear among environmentalists. Are you hearing the same thing, or are you living daily with that?
We are absolutely hearing and experiencing the same thing. And I think for people of faith, I think that it's time for a real return to the fundamentals on this. We have a shared and profound belief and understanding that the earth is a gift, that it belongs to God, that it is our responsibility to take care of it, that things are out of balance, and that it's our job to put it right. And what we're seeing in terms of the ideas and the proposals that are coming out of Washington these days is sadly a real disregard for the pathway that we know is the right one moving forward. So it's a profound and foundational concern.
What are your biggest concerns right now?
I'll put them into sort of two categories, one being concern about what we believe to be the misguided thinking that appears to be guiding where things are going in Washington, and then the specific policy proposals or policy ideas that emerge out of that. So I think on the thinking side of the equation, we were really shocked and saddened last week to hear when the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency made a public statement casting doubt on whether carbon dioxide is responsible for the levels of climate change that we're seeing now. That's a question that's been settled. We see not only abundantly clear evidence of that, but sadly that the tragic impacts of those temperature rises caused by those emissions around the world. We see our brothers and sisters in drought-stricken regions suffering worse, in coastal areas suffering from increased storm activity. Our faith-based relief agencies are struggling to meet the demand. And so that level of thinking is one profound concern that we have, because our thoughts in many ways drive what we actually do. And secondly, we're concerned about the policy proposals. This country had embarked on a pathway over the last 5 to 6 years of more intentionally than ever before making a commitment to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, the pollution that results from the burning of fossil fuels. And the Clean Power Plan was one specific regulatory approach to this. We believed that it was a fair one. It provided a great deal of flexibility in its application at the local level so that different states could approach it in the way that best suited their circumstances. And we're seeing a very clear signals that the days on that regulatory approach are numbered, misguidedly in the name of economic growth, which we know in the long term is on the side of clean energy and renewable energy.
Yeah. Would you talk about the way this administration is approaching the EPA?
I firstly want to be clear that from our perspective, neither of the major political parties has done nearly enough to prioritize these issues, which ultimately are about preserving and protecting an environmental stability that affords all of us the opportunity to have a decent and prosperous and healthy life. Our particular concerns about this administration are that it seems to have a mistrust of very fundamental scientific principles that are universally agreed upon. Secondly, that there is a knee-jerk hostility to the idea that protecting the environment, that clean air and clean water is something that's not good. We just don't understand where that animosity is coming from, especially because it's so overwhelmingly supported by voters in this country. Mm-hmm. What concerns us most is what appears to be a very ideologically driven position that does not take into account what our scientific brothers and sisters have been able to learn, nor what our faith really tells us we need to be doing, which is to be meeting the needs that the human family has for jobs and for economic well-being in a way that protects God's creation. Essentially, we're killing the goose that lays the golden egg.
The president, as you know, received tremendous support from evangelical Christian voters. A lot of those same people are among the constituencies represented by Green Faith. How do you cope with that? How do we counter that?
I think that it's really important in these times when it's very easy for people's emotions to get heated up quickly around a whole host of issues. It's important for people, and for people of faith in particular, to take a deep breath and not to get caught up in the passions of the moment, but to ask themselves deeply, what is the right thing? What is the godly thing for us to be doing at this time? And it's extraordinarily clear. All of the major Catholic, Protestant, evangelical, Jewish, Islamic, other religious leaders have come out squarely and strongly that protecting God's creation is the right thing to do. And they are informed by their faith, by their love for humanity, by their respect for God's good work as shown forth in creation. And they understand also that if we put policies in place wisely and deliberately, that this transition to a cleaner future is something that can create jobs and can make the world a much better place for our children. It's vital that we treat this as moral adults, not turn the environment into a whipping boy for hyper-partisan concerns, but remember what really is the right thing to do.
Green Faith is so productive and effective in the work that you do, but you need help. Are there efforts underway to amplify these other voices in the defense of creation?
On April 29th, a couple of weeks after Easter, a couple of weeks after the Passover season, we will be encouraging, and we are encouraging people of all faiths to join in the People's Climate Movement March for Climate, Jobs, and Justice in Washington, D.C. People can learn more about that at www.peoplesclimate.org. It's a vitally important opportunity for us to show peacefully, but with real clarity, that we care about these issues and that we want our leaders to do the right thing. And I think it's also important, you know, in these days when to some people it feels like they can sort of find a march or a demonstration sort of around almost any corner and maybe they're turned off by that. We are also working to develop affiliates in local communities around the country. We've seen for decades and longer that when people who care about social issues in faith communities, whether that's hunger or poverty, when the interested people in a couple of congregations get together, they can do remarkable things. And that's the approach that we're going to be taking to address the environmental challenges that face us, to build strength and support within faith communities around this country to do what's right by God's creation. And so people can contact me. Our web address is greenfaith.org. We'd love to talk to folks about that.
We now know that if the president gets his way in his budget, the EPA is going to be cut by 31%. Talk, if you will, about the potential consequences of these kinds of massive changes.
The cuts that the president's budget proposed for the Environmental Protection Agency are irresponsible and, I'm going to use a strong word, reckless, because of their extent and their scope. So let me give you an example of a couple of programs. One is a program called Energy Star, which promulgates and raises awareness around standards for energy efficiency of appliances in different classes of appliances. It's a program that has widespread support from industry, from the manufacturers of various classes of equipment. Energy Star has also helped with commercial real estate and with many, many congregations around the country, helping them learn how to conserve energy in their own setting. It's not a program that involves any requirements. It provides a lot of important and valuable impartial information to people, to businesses, to congregations around the country. That program is totally zeroed out of the budget in the president's proposal. Another area that's of great concern to us is the area of environmental justice, because we know that while everybody suffers from pollution, there are some communities, and those are communities of color and low-income communities, that suffer far more than their share of pollution. There is within the EPA an Office of Environmental Justice, which is responsible for trying to raise awareness about these concerns and to empower communities to and to work on, you know, working with industry to address these concerns. That office within EPA is also proposed for total elimination in the president's budget. What we're seeing now, and you know, we are a nonpartisan organization, so I don't say this kind of stuff lightly. What we're seeing now is so fully irresponsible and reckless as an approach to protecting God's good earth as to be of grave, grave concern. And it's why it's so important for people to be in Washington, D.C. on the 29th of April, to become involved in their congregations. It's time to rise in support of God's creation.
And you know, Fletcher, I think it's important, we're just out of time, but I think it's important to stress the fact that this isn't just about the United States. We live in an interdependent world, and the truth is we have brothers and sisters all across the globe that are worried to death and some scared of what's going on in dealing with climate issues in the United States.
I'm so glad that you raised that point, because when people think about environmental concerns, what I'd like to encourage them to think about is small farmers who aren't able to grow a crop because there are extended droughts, which we know are part of climate change. I'd like to think of families in West Virginia and Appalachia who, because of water pollution that's due to fracking and mountaintop removal in their communities, don't have clean water to drink, and they can't bathe their own children in the water in their own homes. I'd like people to think about the children and the families in Newark, New Jersey, or in Harlem, where asthma rates are 4 and 5 times the rate of other less polluted communities, and where when you go to a hospital emergency room, the corridors are lined with children hooked up to breathing apparatus because they've had to miss school because of asthma attacks, because the air quality is so bad. faith communities have an unbreakable commitment to caring for those who are vulnerable and for those who are in need. And to honor that commitment, we must stand for a clean and healthy environment. There is no other way.
The Reverend Fletcher Harper is the Executive Director of Green Faith, inspiring, educating, and mobilizing people of diverse religious backgrounds for environmental leadership. Fletcher is the author of the book Green Faith, Mobilizing God's People to Protect the Planet. Fletcher, thank you so much for taking time to be with us again today on State of Belief Radio.
It's a privilege to be with you. Many thanks and God bless.
Now, before we go, it's almost here. The 2017 Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Awards Ceremony in Washington, D.C. We'll be celebrating the lifetime of work journalist Diane Rehm has shared with her listeners in Washington, D.C. and around the country. We'll also be honoring attorney, constitutional advocate, and Gold Star dad, Kesar Khan. The reception and award ceremony is, write this down, the reception and award ceremony is Tuesday, April 4th at the Mitchell Gold Bob Williams downtown Washington location. In addition to honoring two exemplary Americans, this is also an important fundraiser for Interfaith Alliance. Complete details are available at interfaithalliance.org. We want you to be a part of this special evening. If you can't be there in person, I hope you'll send a contribution. That date again, April 4th, 2017 in Washington, D.C. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, thank you. We're counting on you. Now more than ever, and quite frankly, so are many listeners who aren't able to find the voices that we amplify week after week anywhere else. If you've heard something that you found to be helpful, it'd be great if you would share that with others who might also benefit from hearing it. It's easy to do that on Facebook and Twitter. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. That's stateofbelief.com. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Be sure to join us next week. For more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics, these days you don't know what's coming next. But until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.